Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. A Bridge to God, a little book with big insights by Reverend Peter Stimson, is an inspiring book of answers to spark faith. Described as a thoughtful read on key questions everyone needs to address, helping you travel from doubt to faith, enriching your life with meaning and happiness. Peter K. Stimson is an Episcopal priest, a licensed clinical social worker. He's counseled people from all walks of life since 1972, retired in 2014 as director of Trinity Counseling Service in Princeton, New Jersey. His first book, Map to Happiness, Straightforward Advice on Everyday Issues, was published in 2008. Reverend Stimson also wrote a popular advice column in various newspapers from 1983 to 2014. He holds master's degrees from the University of Ottawa in theology and from the State University of New York at Albany in social work. A Bridge to God, a little book with big insights, is a reflection on the major questions we all ask. Some have caused people to abandon their faith. And author Reverend Peter Stimson joins us on This Week in America. Reverend, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
This is such an important book and answers so many questions, and time is going to go by quickly. So let's start with some of the issues, complicated questions that you give us answers that we can understand. Let's jump right in. So often you hear people say, myself included, why does God allow suffering? We see it all over in the world. And the question comes up, why does he allow that to happen?
Well, let me tell you something personal first. I began to ask that question. My father died when I was 14. I was in a massive car accident when I was ordained, where my car flipped over 6 times. I have a bad back that I've had forever. And if you can see my face, I'm putting like anti-cancer cream on my face to help that. Oh, yes. So not someone who has not visited suffering. So I don't speak, you know, as some kind of guru on top of a mountain, but someone who is just like you, just like anyone who's listening to this presentation. To answer the question as to why God allows suffering, you first have to understand, what is the purpose of your life? Why were we born? And, you know, it's money is great, but money doesn't last. I've often said to people, you know, what are you spending more time on? You know, your Lexus is not going to fit into the coffin with you, but your soul will. So what are you spending more time on? Develop who you are. The purpose of life, really, is to learn how to love in deeper levels. And every interaction that you have with every person on every day of your life defines who you are. You can be kind or cruel. You can be sensitive or insensitive. You can view people as someone to manipulate or potential friends. You have a lifetime of these choices to make to define who you are. And what travels with you from this life to the next is who you are, not what you have. The, you know, God, we focus on the fact that when I say life, of course, you logically would think this life.
Yes.
What you're not necessarily thinking about is that God has promised us a life after this life, a life that is eternal, a life where there will be no pain, no suffering. That's not something that you earn. That's just a gift that all of us will receive. But how you live here will determine how you live there. All those choices that you make throughout every day of your life, they will define who you are. And the judgment of God upon your death is simply to accept your judgment, you know, to allow you to have what you've chosen to have, to allow you to be who you've chosen to be for all eternity. Now, that's pretty serious. So therefore, yes. What if people get off on the wrong path? You know, what if they start to, as I said, manipulate people, be insensitive, not caring? Suffering is a wake-up call. Suffering is kind of like, hello, you know, you're not going to last forever. this life is only a segue to another life. And, you know, how are you doing on your journey? And therefore, it's helping us to reorient ourselves, to begin to look into areas that we have not looked into, such as the virtues that we can develop by how we relate to other people. And it then sparks growth, where you then work on that all your life. You will see, you know, you'll see movies where people have struggled with this and have attained great power, only to then die and feel miserable. So suffering primarily is a wake-up call. It is God not being vengeful, not wanting to hurt us, but wanting to help us and spur us towards higher levels of growth.
That's what
it also helps us to become more compassionate and more sensitive to other people. I mean, if you've suffered with arthritis or you've been through an episode of cancer, if you have a bad back like me, you become extremely caring and empathic to anyone who has a condition like you. It enables you to be more compassionate of them. It also, you know, for those people who lack faith, who wonder, is there anything really to this, to really testify to that by the way in which we suffer and die. The primary example to me, I had a cousin who was dying when I was 25, and I was in the room with her, and she had just been taken off a ventilator and could barely speak above a whisper. It was only a couple of days from death. And in comes our uncle, her uncle and my uncle, a big state trooper. He had given up his faith, had decided he didn't want to go to church anymore. His mother and father urged him to change his mind. He wouldn't listen. His wife, his children, his brothers and sisters paid no attention to anyone. He comes in the room, and my cousin, her name was Peggy, was saying a rosary. And my uncle looks down on her and says, "A lot of good that's doing you." And she just looked at him and signaled him, and he put his ear down to her mouth. And she just was able to say, "I believe." He backed away, kind of knew that he was being a jerk, left the room. She died a day later. That weekend, he went back to church. And it always struck me that here is a person who is so weak, they can't get out of bed, can't even lift her arm up from the bed. And they were able to move the mountain that no one else could move.
It's an amazing story.
Handling suffering, changing our direction in life, growing to become more perfect, developing virtues like kindness, sensitivity, caring, thoughtfulness, responsibility, reliability, truthfulness, all of that evolves who you are. Think about it. Think of the relationships you have with your spouse, with your children, with your friends and your neighbors. The more you work on those virtues, the richer those relationships become, and the more you're rewarded here on this earth. But it also is defining who you are as a person, and that's what travels with you from this life to the next. And as I said, God's judgment is not to, you know, and with some kind of vengeance, open up a big book and decide how many bad things you've done, how many good things you've done.
Yes.
God is simply going to say, "Oh, okay, you've chosen to be that way. That's the way you shall remain." Now, that's pretty heavy. Another way of looking at this is, you know, what really is happiness? And, you know, happiness is not a product you buy at Macy's. Happiness is a process of becoming, and a process that goes on all of your life. Our physical growth stops when we're at a certain age, but our spiritual growth never stops until we take our last breath. And so you can be very rich in terms of how you kind of face life. A lot of people have a hard time understanding what I'm saying. I remember once, you know, in terms of the how your decisions here affect your decision there. And I had an altar boy once when I was just recently ordained. And he said, what's the difference between heaven and hell? And I knew I had to make up a story, you know, that a boy would understand, yes. Not give him some theological, you know,
right.
Education. So I said, well, imagine you go into a big house and there's only two rooms in it, one marked heaven, one marked hell. And I know you, you're a wise guy. You're going to peek into the room marked hell first. And what you're going to see is a long banquet table. And on this long banquet table are all your favorite foods. There is hamburgers, hot dogs, ice cream, cakes, pies, your favorite sodas. There's no lima beans. There's no Brussels sprouts. It's just all your favorites. But all the knives, all the forks, all the spoons are 8 feet tall. And you can't eat the food without using those utensils. And so everyone in that room is starving to death because they can't figure out how to get that food into their mouth. Now you go across the hall into the room marked heaven. It's the exact same picture. Big, long banquet table, all your favorite foods, all the utensils are 8 feet long. But because during your lifetime, you grew to become more and more caring of other people, it immediately dawns on you, I'll feed you and you feed me and we're having a party. Whereas all they can think about in hell is, how do I get that food into my mouth without you stealing it from me? And the food is God. The food is your family. The food is your friends, the relationships you have with them. And so, you know, you don't want to go from this life to the next being spiritually blind. You know, you want to sort of open your mind up. Now, there are plenty of people who, you know, wonder, does God really exist? And I must admit that when I was a boy and my father died, that was something. I used to go to church every day, and that threw me for a loop. And in seminary, one course I took was on the understanding of God. And this is in philosophy, not theology. And there were different proofs for God's existence. For example, the one that I liked, the one that I stuck with, was I want you to imagine a circle. And everything that exists is in the circle. You, me, your computer, your house, dogs, cats, trees, animals of all kinds. What do they all have in common? And the answer is, nothing inside that circle can create itself. You and I are created by our parents. Your house is created by artisans. Trees are created by seeds that fall from their mother tree, and so on. So if nothing inside the circle can create itself, where did the circle come from? There must be at least one being outside the circle who creates at least one being in the circle, and we call that being outside the circle God. Now, there is a challenge to that, which is the conservation of energy. Namely, well, you know, there's always the same amount of energy. It takes different forms, but, you know, there's no creation. It's just that's what has been there forever. Well, the way in which to refute that is by the various formulas for energy. For example, potential energy is weight times height. Picture a boulder on top of a cliff. Kinetic energy is 1/2 the mass times the velocity squared. So if you push the boulder off the cliff and it falls, if you're unlucky enough to be under it, you get squished.
Yes.
But you can't define energy without that boulder. And the question is, where did the boulder come from? And now you're back to the basic proof.
You know, I said in the beginning that Reverend Stimson has a way of making this very understandable and relatable. The book we're talking about, boy, time is going by so quickly, is A Bridge to God, a little book with big insights. Reverend Peter Stimson, I'll spell that if you're Googling. That's Stimpson. Book available at Amazon, the usual places. And if you go to our website, you'll have information there, and you can link on to Reverend Stimson's Amazon site and order the book there as well. We've got a few minutes left in the program, so much more to cover, but as we get older, we all start asking this question, is there really life after death? assure us that there is. And I'm sure this is a question that comes up quite frequently that you deal with this. And again, it's one of these faith challenging questions that, we all have from time to time. Is there really life after death?
There is, but here's the explanation as to why. And here faith is important. We just celebrated Christmas when God became man, when the Word became flesh. Well, when that happened, the Spirit of God was connected to the Spirit of man. And metaphysically, this connection was established. And because Jesus was not only a human being, but also God, the effect of that incident on Christmas Day affected not only the people of his time, but extended back all the way to the beginning of time and all the way to the end of time. That's why, for example, in Scripture, it will say, "And if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who lives in you." When you were kids, you might have been taught that your body was the temple of the Holy Spirit. Well, you know, the whole God isn't like a million miles that way. God is one inch this way. It is that connection with the Spirit of God that is eternal, living inside of us who are temporal, that enables us when we draw our last breath to immediately draw our first breath in the afterlife. And so that is what enables it to occur, the gift of the Holy Spirit to humanity. Now, this is, you know, not necessarily the easiest thing to understand, but there are even scientists who are atheists who have come to believe because, you know, one was a man by the name of Francis Collins who wrote a book, The Language of God. And he said, you know, the Big Bang explains what happened, but where did the elements of the Big Bang come from? You know, if the, you know, the Big Bang theory begs the question of what came before. And it had to be someone living outside of time and space and someone who was not natural, but supernatural. And so this person who was an atheist through his scientific research came to believe that there was a God. And I'm saying that God exists and I'm saying that God has given all of us, the gift of life after death. The problem is, how are you going to live there? And that is determined by you in terms of how you choose to live your life. When I wrote the book, let me just finish with telling you a story. I remember years ago, I had a friend who was an atheist, and he and I were, he was a mountain climber. He was also a scientist and a chemist. And we had many, many, many talks. And I was able to help him believe and come back to church. When he died, his wife noticed in his wallet a piece of paper folded over into many pieces. I opened it up, and inside of it was a poem. And he was a mountain climber. And so the poem is one he loved. And I want to just read it to you quickly.
Sure.
"An old man going a lone highway came at the evening cold and gray to a chasm vast and deep and wide through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream has no fears for him. But he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. 'Old man,' said a fellow pilgrim near, 'you're wasting your time with building here. You never again will pass this way. Your journey will end with the closing day. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you this bridge at evening tide?' The builder lifted his old gray head. 'Good friend, in the way I've come,' he said, 'there followed after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way, this stream that has been naught to me. To the fair-haired youth might a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building the bridge for him.'" Well, I'm 75, I'm towards the end of my life. I've seen so many people struggle with their faith and lose their faith over the issues around which I wrote this book. Therefore, I wanted to build a bridge for you, the reader, to help you kind of cross from doubt to faith, from discouragement to hope. I wanted to give you that in a simple way. Therefore, the book is only 86 pages long. I wanted it to be simple to read. I didn't want it to be something where, you know, you had to strain a muscle to pick it up.
Yes.
I wanted something that you could read, you know, and with ease. And you heard some of the stories I'm telling. The book is written in that way so that anyone could really understand it. So this book is my present to people, to those I love. If it helps you a little bit, terrific. If you don't like it, use it as, you know, the bottom of your bird feeder, but give it a chance. And because I want you to be happy. I love you. Well, so please, if you can, spend a whopping $11 and buy this simple book.
Well,
anyway,
it's a book that you're going to add to your library that you will go back to from time to time and be able to reference. It's a book that you will either loan out to people to help them through difficult times or buy copies of the book and give to people as they go through difficult times. I mentioned in the beginning addressing the issues that we all struggle with from time to time. And for some people, these issues they can't overcome and they do leave the faith. And this book is there to help, as the Reverend said. The book is A Bridge to God, a little book with big insights by Reverend Peter Stimpson. That's S-T-I-M-P-S-O-N. Book available at Amazon, all of the usual places. You can go to our website, link on directly to the Amazon page with all of the information. Reverend Stimpson, it's been a pleasure. So much more that we could talk about. Hopefully we'll have a chance to do that again. So well done, the book and your presentation today. And again, it's an example why you've been so effective in talking with people. You talk their language. You give us examples that we can relate to. Thank you for spending some time with us on the program.
Thank you, Rick. And take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. The guest is Reverend Peter Stimpson, the book A Bridge to God, a little book with big insights. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.